Good morning, everybody. It's good to see you out. It's good to be with fellow Christians, people who want to know more about God. We've got a lot of material this morning, but I hope that if you have any questions or comments, that you'll speak up this morning and help us all out. Of course, we're in the book of Genesis, as we have been this whole quarter, talking about the patriarchs, and most of the time we'll be talking about Jacob. Again, there's a lot of ways you can divvy up the book of Genesis. One of the most simple ways is divided into two. The first 11 chapters talking about the creation, the flood, and the scattering of the people. And the last 39 chapters or so talking about the patriarchs. Leading up to our lesson today, it's been about 600 years since the flood, or over 600 years since the flood. Jacob and Esau are 97 years old. Isaac would be 157, Joseph is 6 years old, and Abraham has been dead for about 84 years. And again, as I write on there, all of these ages are approximate, but it kind of gives you an idea as to where we're at in the time. The way that I come up with all this is just by going back to the Bible and some of those long lists of this guy begat this guy, begat this guy. They tell you how old they were when they did all their begetting. Sometimes those numbers aren't in there, and I'm sure it's kind of hard to see what I've got on there. But I just start with Adam, and then my next one was, how old were they when their child was born? You know, the one that we're keeping up with. How long did they live after the child was born, and how old were they when they died? And again, a lot of them are pretty simple to keep up with. Like the Bible tells us that Isaac was 60 years old when Jacob and Esau were born. So that's pretty straightforward. Some of them, you have to do a little math. And some of them, I don't know if you can actually come up with an exact number. So that's why I keep saying, if I did my math right, and these numbers are approximate. Okay. Leading up to our story today, Jacob went to Haran. He went there to find a wife, but he also went to escape his brother, right? Remember, after Jacob stealing the blessing from Esau, Esau wanted to kill him. And so Rebekah and Isaac sent him up to Haran. They didn't want him marrying one of the Canaanite women, so he went up there. And Rebekah thought he would only be up there a few days. As we see from our lesson today, he was up there 20 years. At this point, Jacob has two wives and he has two concubines. He has Rachel and Leah for his wives, and Zilpah and Bilhah for the concubines. And he's worked for Laban, his uncle, and his father-in-law. Laban was both of those. And he worked for him for 20 years to get his daughters and his cattle, as we'll see. And Jacob has become very rich. Again, another map to kind of show the area that we're in. The big brown blob over to the right, up to the top of that, is where our story is for most of it today in Paddan Aram. And it shows, if you were able to see it close enough, and it's pretty near impossible, it would be Haran up at the top. And then, of course, Israel is over toward the Mediterranean Sea. Another one, and hopefully you can see the little red dot up in the upper left-hand corner, and that would be the area that we're talking about starting off today with Haran. Basically, we're talking about the same group of people that we did on Wednesday night, but we'll talk more about Esau today. And obviously Isaac and Jacob, and we'll be talking about Haran, the mountains of Gilead, and I should have put on there Mount Seir, since that's where Esau will be coming from. We talked about Wednesday night the children that Jacob had while he was there in Paddan Aram. Leah had the first four boys, Bilhah had two, Zilpah had two, Leah had two boys, and then Dinah, the daughter, and then Rachel had one. So he had 11 boys and one daughter while he was in the land of Paddan Aram around Haran. We often talk about the 12 sons of Jacob. But that 12th son wasn't born until they go back into Canaan. Benjamin wasn't born until they go back into Canaan. All the children, all these 12 children, the 11 boys and the one daughter, Dinah, are 13 years old or younger in today's lesson when it starts. So how do we come up with that? Well, first of all, Jacob spends 20 years in Haran, 20 years. The first 7 of those years, he wasn't married yet to Rachel or Leah. He spent those first 7 years working for Laban to marry Rachel. So you get the 20 minus 7, that gives you the 13. Those next 13 years is when all those sons and daughters were born. And again, Joseph was the youngest of those that were born during this time, and he was 6 years old. Okay, Jacob left home because of Esau. We remember the story of when he went up to Haran and he stopped and he had that dream at night, the angels ascending and descending on the ladder and the Lord telling him, you know, I'm going to be with you wherever you go. And it's through you that the promises are coming now. He worked 14 years for Laban's daughters and he worked 6 years for his flocks. We saw how God was with Jacob and how he gave Jacob all of Laban's strong cattle and how that he peeled the sticks and put them in the water troughs as they were about to have young ones, and they had the speckled and the spotted. Again, that had to be through God's providence there. And he's blessing Jacob. And in chapter 30 and verse 43, it says, thus the man Jacob became exceedingly prosperous and had large flocks, female and male servants, and camels and donkeys. So he was a very rich man. Okay, so on Wednesday night, Lord willing, Brent will be covering chapters 33 through 38. Won't be hitting 37, but basically 33 through 38. And today we'll be hitting, Lord willing, 31 through the first part of 33. Okay, any questions or comments about that review area? Okay, thank you. Today's outline. Jacob decides that he's going to leave Haran and he's going to leave Laban. And he actually does leave. There's only a couple of verses that talk about Mahanaim when Jacob runs into this camp of angels. And then we'll talk about him meeting his brother that he hasn't seen, at least seemingly for 20 years. Jacob decides to leave, and he makes a habit of this. Remember, he left his mom and dad 20 years ago to get away from Esau and to find a wife. And he's leaving Haran now to get away from Laban, but also to get back to his father Isaac. And we'll see later on that he leaves Shechem. And it seems like to me he's leaving Shechem to avoid trouble. I'm sure that's not the full story of why he left Shechem, but I think it's at least part of it. So Jacob does a lot of moving around. Jacob has been tending Laban's sheep for 6 years. He's been working for Laban for 20 years. And now Laban and his sons don't feel about Jacob the way that they used to. Remember, 20 years ago, Jacob told Laban, I'll work for Rebekah for 6 years. And that was okay with Laban, or for 7 years. And after that 7 years, he says, give me my wife. And we remember how he tricked him into working another 7 years. And so he winds up with Rebekah and Rachel and Leah. I'm getting all these names messed up. He's working for Rachel and Leah. Well, after those 14 years, Jacob wanted to go home. And he said, give me my wives and my children and let me go home. And Laban says, I see how God has blessed me because you're here. Please stay. Name your wages. And Jacob named his wages of the speckled and the spotted sheep and all that. And we've already talked about how that God blessed him with getting the strong speckled and the spotted sheep. And now instead of Laban really being happy with Jacob anymore and his sons being happy with him, they're saying, Jacob stole our father's flocks. And so Jacob sees that they're not happy with him anymore. And about this time, the Lord appears to Jacob and he says, go home to your father Isaac. I'll be with you. And so in Genesis chapter 28 and verse 15, remember there when Jacob was on his way up to Haran, the Lord told him, behold, I am with you and will keep you wherever you go and will bring you back to this land, for I will not leave you until I have done what I have spoken to you. Well, the Lord's kind of reiterating that promise. I'll be with you wherever you go. Go back to your father. And so Jacob calls for his wives. He calls for Rachel and Leah, and they come out to the field where Jacob is. And he tells them, you know, your father has not treated me very well. He's changed my wages 10 times. I've really had to work really hard for him. And the Lord has appeared to me and said, go back home to your father. And they said, we'll go with you. We'll go with you. It reminds you of what is said in Genesis chapter 2 and verse 24, where it says, therefore a man shall leave his father and mother and be joined to his wife, and they shall become one flesh. Yes, we as children are to love and honor and respect our parents, but we're to cleave to our spouses. And so they were going to do that. Jacob was going to leave. Leah and Rachel said, we'll leave too. It was interesting to me, though, the reasoning that they gave when Jacob was talking to Leah and Rachel about leaving. They said, yes, we'll leave. They said in Genesis 31, verses 14 through 16, then Rachel and Leah answered and said to him, Jacob, is there still any portion or inheritance for us in our father's house? Are we not considered strangers by him? For he has sold us and also completely consumed our money. For all these riches which God has taken from our father are really ours and our children's. Now then, whatever God has said to you, do it. So it seems like they've got a couple of things against their father, Laban. One is they didn't like it when he sold them to Jacob, apparently. And remember, Jacob didn't have any money. He had to work 14 years for his wives. But it also seems like, secondly, their dad doesn't have anything for them anymore. He hasn't got any riches anymore. Jacob has got all that. So why should we linger around here? What has he got to give us? Doesn't seem like Rachel and Leah had a very loving relationship with Laban. Seems like it was based on money, at least in this description of why they tell Jacob, yes, let's go on and leave here. So Jacob decides to leave, and this is a big deal. This is a momentous occasion, I'd say, in Jacob's life. He's got the trouble that he has had for 20 years, and that being Laban, versus the trouble that he has been avoiding or running from for 20 years in Esau. From all indications, Jacob still thinks that Esau wants to kill him. I don't know how much communication, if any, that he has had with his parents or with Esau during these last 20 years. But we'll see through the rest of the lesson that he is still scared of Esau and that he thinks that Esau is out to get him. So he's between a rock and a hard place, right? But he's made a decision, and God has told him to do this, to leave Laban and to go back toward his family. And so he knows what he's got, or he thinks he knows what he's got waiting for him when he gets home. In chapter 31 and verse 18 then, it says, and he, Jacob, carried away all his livestock and all his possessions which he had gained, his acquired livestock which he had gained in Paddan Aram, to go to his father Isaac in the land of Canaan. Okay, any questions or comments about what we've covered so far? Okay. So Jacob takes his wives and his livestock and all that he's got, and he leaves. And he does this while Laban is out shearing sheep. He doesn't even tell Laban that he and his daughters are leaving. And you remember when Jacob decided to work or agreed to work with Laban for another 6 years, that they separated by 3 days' worth. 3 days of travel between Jacob's cattle and Laban's cattle. So he has a three-day head start on Laban as it was. Laban doesn't find out about Jacob leaving until 3 days after Jacob has left. And then it takes Laban 7 days to catch up with him. So if I understood what the Bible said correctly, Jacob had left 10 days before Laban actually catches up with him. And Mr. Waldron in his book says that Laban was really booking because he had gone about 300 to 400 miles in these 10 days. And, you know, with us on a car or on a whatever, that's not much. But when you consider that he has all these little children with him and he's pushing cattle, he's pushing these livestock, going 30 or 40 miles a day seems like a lot of mileage to cover. And yet that's what he's done. We'll see where he slows things down in a little bit when he comes in contact with Esau. But he's trying his best to get away from Laban with everything that he's got. When he takes off, Rachel steals Laban's idols. And it makes you wonder what Laban actually worshipped or who Laban actually worshipped. In Joshua 24 and verse 15, we've talked about this verse before. I think we maybe even mentioned it Wednesday night. Joshua said to the people then, "And if it seems evil to you to serve the Lord, choose for yourselves this day whom you will serve, whether the gods which your fathers served that were on the other side of the river or the Amorites, the gods of the Amorites." So it seems like Joshua is indicating that maybe Terah, maybe Nahor, maybe Bethuel, maybe Laban, all of those people on the other side of the Euphrates River were worshiping these idols. And we see where Laban refers to God in the conversations with Jacob. Was he referring to Jehovah God, or was he referring to these idols? When he was worshiping these idols, did he think he was worshiping Jehovah? Or was Jehovah just one amongst many idol gods to him? I don't think the Bible tells us, but the Bible does tell us that he had idols. So we have to understand that he was an idol worshiper and Rachel took those idols from him. Hard to see this map. Up at the top would be Haran. And this would be one way at least of walking down to Shechem. And Laban catches up with Jacob before he gets to Shechem, but he catches up with him in the mountains of Gilead. And again, you're talking about a 400 to 500 mile journey there. The Lord, before Laban catches up with Jacob, the Lord comes to Laban and tells him, "Don't speak either good or evil to Jacob. Calm down, take it easy with him." And that was interesting to me because Laban was, again, an idol worshiper, and the Lord shows up to him and talks to him. Kind of reminds you of what the Lord did with Abimelech when there was that whole story between Abimelech and Abraham and Sarah, and the Lord shows up to Abimelech in a dream. Well, the Lord shows up to Laban and tells him to take it easy with Jacob. So it seems like it's the next day, Laban comes to Jacob and says, "You didn't even tell me you were leaving. You took my daughters and my grandkids away and you didn't even tell me you were leaving. I might would have kissed my family. I might would have thrown a party for you before you left. And even if I know that you really wanted to get back to your father Isaac, why did you steal my gods?" And that's how he refers to them, those idols, as his gods. Jacob says, "I was afraid you would take my wives away from me. You would take your daughters." And he goes on to say, "I didn't take your idols. Whoever you find those idols with, let them be put to death." Because he didn't know that Rachel had taken them. And so Laban takes that opportunity and he goes through all the stuff. He goes through the maid's tents. He goes through Leah's tent and searches everything. He goes through Rachel's tent and searches everything, almost. And he doesn't find those idols. They were in Rachel's tent, and she was hiding them, and they were in the saddlebags. But she was sitting on the saddlebags, and she tells her dad, "The manner of women is upon me. Please excuse me from getting up." And so he never finds them. And at this point, when he comes back out, Jacob is just infuriated at Laban for going through all his stuff. And he unloads on Laban. And he tells him about all the mean things that Laban has done to him for the past 20 years. How he has had to work with Laban when there was drought, when there was cold. How he had to bear all the losses of Laban's cattle when he had losses. And how he had changed his wages 10 times. And he just really unloads on Laban. You would think Laban would defend himself, but he doesn't. He doesn't directly answer any of these charges that Jacob makes against him. He just says, "Your wives, they're my children. Your children, they're my children. Let's make a covenant that we will not hurt each other or harm each other, and that you will not harm my daughters and my grandchildren." And so they do that. They pile up rocks, and they pile up some rocks. Jacob calls the place Gilead, and therefore we see Gilead from now on. And they make a covenant there. And just as we see throughout many times, whenever a covenant is made, they eat. And then the next morning, Laban and all his company return home. Questions or comments about that? Very good. Very good. Yeah, that's a good question, because the Canaanites were idol-worshipping people. Apparently, Laban and his, at least some of his family, were idol-worshipping people. But like Mr. Richter said, God was in all this, directing Jacob to find these people, and there was some good in them. Good comment. Any other questions or comments? It seems like it's a very good time for Jacob to leave. Because to me, this was a very sad family. We see the deception that goes on in this family. Laban deceives Jacob. Rachel deceives Laban about the idols. Jacob deceived Isaac, his father, earlier, and we'll see how Jacob's sons deceive him. But anyways, this little core group here, very sad. We see the greed and the wages and several other things that goes on. We see the distrust within this own little small family here. And we see the idol worship. It does seem like it's a good time for Jacob to be getting out of here. And, of course, the Lord has told him to. Not much is said about this. After Laban leaves, Jacob takes off. He comes into this company of angels, and he calls this place Mahanaim, which means double camp. Mr. Waldron said it's called double camp because of Jacob's camp and because of the camp of angels. And I just put on there to remember the angels going up and down the ladder that Jacob saw earlier. Seems like angels play quite a role in Jacob's life. Again, I think there's only a verse or two that says anything about this. Any questions or comments about that? Okay. To me, this next part, part of it is just very beautiful. Jacob's scared. Like I said, when he left, Esau was wanting to kill him. And as far as he knows, at least from the context of everything, he still thinks he wants him to kill him. So he sends, on his way back, he sends a messenger to Esau and says, "I'm coming home. And God's blessed me. I've got a big family. I've got a lot of possessions." And then the messenger comes back and says, "Esau's coming to meet you, and he's got 400 men. So what is Jacob to assume, but other than Esau is coming to get me, and he's got this small army with him, and he's going to take me out. So Jacob's pretty scared about this, and he divides up his company into two different companies. He says, if they attack one company, maybe the other company of folks will get away. And he does more than that. He prays to God for deliverance. He says in his prayer to God, I am not worthy of the least of the many blessings that you have given me. Not worthy of the least of them. I crossed over the Jordan heading north with just my staff. And here I am, I'm coming back with two companies of people and stuff. You've blessed me a lot. Please do what you have said in taking care of me where I'm going. Please take care of me with Esau. And so after that, Jacob starts sending these droves of animals. We'll talk about them in a minute. As a present to Esau to try to gain some favor with him. At night, he sends everybody across the Jabbok River, and he stays on one side of it. And it's a really interesting story how at that night, he wrestles with this man. We're not told who the man is, but Jacob seems to indicate that there was something special about this man. They wrestle all night, and the man says, "Let me go." Jacob says, I'm not going to let you go until you bless me. And the man says, what's your name? And he says, Jacob. And the man says, you will no longer be called Jacob. You will be called Israel. Remember, Jacob was a planter. Now he's got a lot better name. Josephus says Israel meant one that struggled with the divine angel. And another place said Israel means prince of God. So no longer supplanter, but prince of God. How much better a name is that? Mr. Waldron, in his book, says that this man wrestling with Jacob was to indicate with Jacob, you have prayed to me, and now you have wrestled with this man. I am with you. Why are you worried about Esau? I'm on your side. I'll take care of you. Jacob called the name of the place Peniel, for I have seen God face to face, and my life is preserved. Peniel meaning the face of God. And it reminds you of what he called the place where he saw the ladder going up and down to heaven. He called that what? Bethel, or house of God. So we had Bethel, the house of God, and Peniel, the face of God. And this is a map that kind of shows where some people think that some of those places were. Some of those places we don't really know for sure where they were. But it shows how he may have crossed over the Jordan at some point. Remember, at this point, he hasn't crossed over the Jordan again. I think I stole this from Wayne. This shows where at least a ford of the Jabbok, and when you think about trying to cross over that with all those animals that he had, seems like that would be a pretty tough go. I'm sure it's hard to see, but what I was trying to do with this map was to show how Esau was coming up from the bottom of the map, from Mount Seir, up into the area around the Jabbok River where Jacob was to see him. And that was about 160, 180-mile journey. And so Esau is coming quite a ways to see Jacob. And he's got 400 men with him. So Jacob prepares to meet Esau. He separates his wives and their children. He puts the concubines first, and they go up ahead with their children. Then Leah comes next with her children. And finally at the back, saving her, hopefully to get away if there's trouble, is Rachel with Joseph. And again, he's 6 years old. And then Jacob and Esau finally meet. On the way going up to Esau, Jacob bows himself down seven times. And we see in this, he refers to Esau as my Lord Esau. But he bows down to him seven times, showing humility, hoping that Esau is not going to kill him. And this part is just so beautiful to me, how Esau runs up to him and he hugs him, he embraces him, says he falls on his neck and he kisses him. And can you imagine the relief running through Jacob at this point, where he thought, sure, Esau was going to kill him, but he's kissing him. He is showing brotherly love to him. The relief that Jacob must have felt at this time is enormous. This weight is draining off of him. And what a gift that was. Esau, remember all those animals that Jacob was giving, had already sent out front. And Esau said, what is it with all these animals? And he says, they're a gift to you. And we see the gift that he gave to Jacob, to Esau. Jacob was a very, very, very rich man. He gave him over 550 animals. It's easy to read through that real quick and not pay attention to, but he is giving Esau over 550 animals. How rich was Jacob? And we're sure that he's probably keeping some for himself, right? I didn't try to figure out how much all these would have cost in today's money, but I'm sure it was quite a lot. Jacob tries to get Esau to take them. Esau says, I have enough. You keep your stuff. Esau wasn't there to try to take Jacob's stuff. It really does seem that there was a brotherly bond there that he wanted to renew. But Jacob says, I have enough. Some versions say, I have all. And he really did at this point, didn't he? He still had all of his stuff. He had gotten away from a bad situation with Laban. And now he has a good relationship with Esau again. He has gotten this weight off his shoulders. He really does have all. And you have to feel good for Jacob. And so after, you know, keeping on telling Jacob or Esau to take it, Esau finally does decide to take it. Esau says, let's head on back home. And Jacob says, I'm slowing down. You know, if I go real fast with these animals or with these young ones, you know, I may hurt them. Esau says, well, I've got these 400 people here with me. Let me leave some of them with you to help you. And Jacob says, there's no need. And so Esau goes back home to Mount Seir. And Jacob travels on to Succoth, we see. And then in Wednesday's lesson, we'll see how he goes on to Shechem. So this part about Jacob and Esau getting back together, to me, is one of the best parts of this story. Any questions or comments about that? Okay. A few summary and applications. God can use any of us to perform His purpose. We've talked about some of the failings of some of the people that we've been talking about. But if we looked at ourselves, we have to think about Romans 3:23, for all have sinned and come short of the glory of God. I mean, how many of us have lived perfectly? None of us. God can use us just like He used Jacob. We often worry about things that never happen. Jacob was very concerned about what was going to happen when he met Esau. And I can't tell you the number of times where I was just worried and I thought to myself, this bad thing that's in front of me is going to happen and it's going to kill me. Well, you know, I was putting my trust in myself when I did that. I wasn't trusting in God. Forgiveness is good for the one being forgiven and for the one doing the forgiving. Jacob was forgiven, and, you know, what a great thing it was for him. But what a great thing it was for Esau to forgive. You know, when we hold things against people, we, you know, that hate and that bitterness boils up within us. What good does that do? Forgiveness is good. And then, having a clear conscience is better than any possessions. I am sure that Jacob would have given Esau much, much more than those 550 animals just to have a good relationship with him. And sometimes we try to hold things to ourselves and try instead of clearing up a relationship and some problem that we may have with somebody else. Questions or comments about these? I have one other thing that I wanted to talk about, an observation. we have, I feel like I have unloaded on Jacob and talked about all the bad things that he did and all the bad things that happened within his family. There was a lot of deception that went on there. There was a lot of greed. There was a lot of bad situations. We talked about the favoritism that was within the family. But Jacob was chosen by God to be in Christ's lineage. Jacob was the one chosen for all the promises to come through him. That says something about Jacob. He didn't leave his family, even though there was much discord. Remember how all the trouble was going on between his wives, Rachel and Leah? And he had all these kids. You know, that's hard enough. But with your, when your the wives were just at each other's throat, they were so jealous. It would have been easy for Jacob to have just ran off or to have sent them off. But he didn't do that. He didn't divorce them. And one of the things, you know, in our country today, divorce is so rampant. And it seems like people find any little reason just to leave their family. But Jacob kept his family together. His name was used for God's chosen people in the Old Testament. Israel. We think of the Israelites. We think of Jacob's family. We think of Jacob and his descendants. And God spoke to him. There were several occasions, and you can go to these different passages. I think seven different passages that I have here. And maybe there's more. But at least these seven where God or angels, a dream, God sent his message to Jacob. Jacob had his failings, but Jacob was a very special man too. Thank you for your patience and for your help with the class.